Yep, we're at the beginning of chapter 5.
Yes.
Okay, chapter 5 is a parenthetical statement.
Okay.
There may be those who argue with me on this, but I don't see it as coming in a direct relationship to the flow of what's been going on. Chapter, the end of chapter 1, he talks about Jesus' Nefesh Bahamas. Chapter 2, he says you have a Nefesh Elokis. Chapter 3, he says that the Nefesh Elokis is made out of 10 parts. Chapter 4, he says that the Nefesh Elokis has 3 garments. Chapter 6, he says that the Nefesh Bahamas has 10 parts and 3 garments. And chapter 7 talks about all types of evil, and chapter 8 talks about more about evil. Chapter 5 is talking about a word which he focuses on at the end of the parsha, at the end of the parak.
Okay,
because he made a statement that we're talking about the world to come.
Yes.
Is only just a ray of Hashem, and leis machshava tefisa beklal. No thought can grasp on Hashem at all. In chapter 5, he talks about this idea, this statement, this colloquialism, which has been a colloquialism for many millennia, as to what's this idea of grasping a concept.
Okay. Yes.
Okay, because when you use the word grasp, grasp means with your fingers held tightly. That is the word grasp. So how then is it that the word grasp applies to a thought? You don't put your fingers on a thought.
No.
Okay? So that's what he says. Latesis beer ber hetif. To explain well, Lashon tefisa shamilahu leis machshava tefisa bach. That the word tefisa, meaning grasp, that Eliyahu said in the previous chapter, quoted, was that no thought can grasp you. Actually, it's very interesting. He says in Shar Yechid Ve'amuna, a great line, that a person says, I cannot understand God, makes as much sense as, I don't know what calculus tastes like.
Yes.
Because, we don't even understand that.
Correct.
Because in our rules of grammar, God is a noun. And noun is defined as person, place, or thing.
Right.
And concept would therefore be a thing.
Right.
Okay? And therefore, if it is a noun, I should be able to comprehend it.
Right.
Okay? But Hashem is neither person, place, or thing.
Correct.
That's why Kushner came up with the idea that God is a verb. You know, his whole thing over there. And it is, it's sort of like a construct. Yud Kei Vav Kei is a construct of the verb to be. Sort of like a future perfect tense of the verb to be, which doesn't exist in any language as far as I know.
Right.
So that's why God is given that name. So the, but to say, he says, people laugh. Someone says, you know, I just don't know what calculus tastes like.
That is correct.
You know, me personally, I think calculus is really delicious, but that's...
Indeed.
So, but because calculus is not something that you can put in your mouth, and God is not something that you can understand. It just doesn't, it's not even in the same, it's not the right verb to use.
Yeah, correct.
Okay, that's why it doesn't say in the Zohar, no thought can comprehend him, because that's duh.
Right.
Hashem is well beyond comprehension. This is even grasp. That there's any, you haven't got an inkling. When it comes to understanding the greatness of Hashem, he already said before in chapter 4, in a place where you say Hashem is great, that's really chump change. Because that's all our ability to understand this amount of godliness. So how does he explain this idea of grasping? In a kol seichel, you have a concept. When a person will conceptualize and comprehend with his intellect some concept, what happens is that the intellect grasps the concept and encompasses it with his intellect. Now, what does the word encompass mean? It's not like you're suddenly, you know, you're extending your brain power and going, you know, and it's just like, I'm encompassed by Akiva's conceptual age, you know. No, that's not what the word encompass means. The word encompass, the word makiv and soviv and chassidus and kabbalah is totally and completely misunderstood, totally and completely mistranslated. It's an example given in a Maimarim about the idea of the relationship. An example of makiv would be, for example, if you were to picture, you ever seen a rock?
Once.
Yeah, okay. Now, could you picture in your mind what that rock looked like?
Oh, it's printing.
Once.
Okay, good. Now, you can do that. Do you have a rock in your head? We're not going to ask that. That's not a personal question. We're not going to ask your wife. No.
The technical answer is no.
No. You do not have a rock in your head.
Correct.
Yet you have an image of a rock in your head that you once saw.
Yes, sir.
That's called makiv.
Yes.
Okay? Your thought is not surrounding the rock.
No.
Okay, but rather what's happened is that your thought is extended around, so to speak, this concept of a rock.
Okay.
So that the idea of rock, you can look at it from all ends. Okay, you are able to express the concept of rock.
Yes.
In your mind.
Yes.
Okay, that's called makiv. Okay, then he says one step further. If you look inside, what happens the concept is nitfis umukuf umalubish b'teich haseichel shehesigu. The concept is grasped and encompassed and enclosed within his head, within his intellect, that he's comprehending. That is comprehending and conceptualizing.
Uh-huh.
And also the intellect is enclosed in the concept at the time that he is comprehending it and grasping it with his seichel. Now, let's put that into English. There's lots of comprehensions and concepts and seichels and all. It's one of the most confusing sentences in the entire Tanya. That little bit over here. Okay. What's happening is twofold. The concept is enclosed in your intellect.
Right.
Everything that you think about and you understand, every bit of information, now makes you a smarter person. Our intellect is a composite of facts.
Yes.
And the more facts you have in your intellect, we're going to say the smarter you are.
Correct. Okay.
Okay? As far as being a maven in any specific subject goes. Because you got all these facts in your head.
Okay.
Okay, but then you have something.
I'll let it slide for now, go.
But then you have something called the intelligence.
That's
the second thing. The intelligence that you have just very nicely fits around every intellect, because this is sort of like, it now becomes Cartesian. You know the famous thought, the famous statement of Descartes, more than I think, therefore I am, is there must be a God, because I can think about something called God proves that God exists.
Okay.
That was what Descartes said.
Okay.
That was his famous proof of God's existence.
Okay.
If I can think about it, it must be there.
Stretch,
right.
But okay.
Yeah. They don't call it Cartesian logic for nothing over here, you know. So anyway, so the intellect now sort of like blankets all of these various and sundry concepts that are out there. So that what happens is going to say is that when a person has, the person finally says, yeah, got it, that concept is now part of them.
Okay.
What they do with it is now going to be how, that's a separate thing. But once they have that concept, it is within them. Okay, until they start getting some timers, it's going to be there with them.
Exactly.
You know, and you can't take it with you.
Yeah.
You know the story that Rabbi Meir was on a boat.
Okay.
Traveling from point A to point B.
Yeah.
think it was actually traveling from Tarshish to Rome. And the boat, there was all these business people on the boat. And they're talking about what wonderful merchandise they have and how much money they make. And they turned to Rabbi Meir and they said, what kind of wares are you selling? And he said, I'm a teacher. And they laughed at him. Ha, 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 ha. What kind of, you know, even teachers back then didn't make money. You know, so what happened?
The boat. Your good tradition.
Yes. The boat. It goes back even more than that. You know, Yaakov didn't give Shimon any land in Eretz Yisrael.
Okay.
The Bnei Yehuda were nice enough to give them an enclave within, totally within their borders.
Okay.
The tribe of Shimon was totally surrounded by the tribe of Yehuda.
Okay.
But the tribe of Shimon were the itinerant school teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to park themselves all over the country teaching little kids. That was with a lot of the Shimonites. So, but anyway, the boat was taken by pirates. The cargo was confiscated.
Right.
And all of the passengers were sold into slavery.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So they're all there. They're doing the Ben-Hur thing over there with
right.
the oars. You know, boom, boom, boom.
Right.
Paddling away.
Yes.
And they get to some port and it's still whatever. And Rabbi Meir says, I will be able to buy our freedom. Everybody on the boat, he says, I will be able to buy our freedom.
Okay.
How so? Is he hired himself out as a teacher? Okay. And he fired himself out as a teacher. He finally was able to redeem all of these people who were sold into slavery. When they came back to wherever, Eretz Yisrael, they finally returned back to Eretz Yisrael with this whole load of ships. These were all Jews, by the way, this whole group.
Uh-huh.
And they saw there was a tremendous welcome for who? For Rabbi Meir.
Yeah, of course, yes.
And they saw the greatness then of what he had.
Right.
And yeah, that's where this comes in. It comes into the, it says over there, I think at that point is where they coined the phrase that Torah is the best Eschaira. Torah is the best merchandise.
Indeed, yes.
Okay, so. There's two things going on over here. One is your thoughts are encompassing the seichel, and two, the seichel is being clothed in your thoughts, so that you are totally, completely one with that thought. And here's how he explains over here. Derech Mashal, for example, Kishad the Mavin of Masig Eza Halacha b'Mishna Oyba Gemara, when a person will understand some halacha. In the Mishnah and the Gemara, we didn't turn the page yet, but your pages are still on page 10. Yep, down the bottom. La Ashura al Burie, to its full clarity, Harisich loy taifis umakif oisoy, his seichel, his intellect, grasps and encompasses that halacha. Vigam sichlo malubish ba. And also his intellect is enclosed in the halacha.
Mm-hmm.
You get a person who is deeply engrossed in their thoughts.
Yeah.
Okay? To the point where they are oblivious of what else is going on.
Right.
What is happening there is that their intellect, their chachma primarily, is enclosed in the concept.
Right.
It's not until they understand it that the concept becomes enclosed in their intellect. So you have a two-way thing going on over here.
Right.
So there's it says about the Rebbe's brother, Yehuda Aryeh Leib, that he had a tremendous ability to concentrate.
Okay.
The Rebbe's mother was very proud of her children, and she used to like to show them off.
Okay.
So here was this, like, I don't know, 13-year-old kid, who'd already lived, and he's sitting and learning Gemara. So somebody came over, I don't know who it was, some rabbi or something came over. She said, let me show you my Yehuda, my label, that's what they call it, my label. So she went over, she opened the door where he was sitting, and she went, label! Label! She went over and shook him like this.
Uh-huh.
Now, I know what that was. That was your typical 13-year-old saying, go away, Mom. Leave me alone.
Yeah.
Don't bother me.
Right,
that
wasn't
concentration. But that's the way the story goes.
Indeed.
So. So, hine halacha zu. Now let's talk about the halacha. Now, this is true with anything. You could be studying the Detroit Lions statistics, and this was what would be happening.
Yeah.
Okay. Wouldn't be too hard to discuss all the wins that the Lions had last year.
You could take care of that about it.
Yep. Yep. But clarify.
Yeah,
yes. Okay. So that's what's happening with any concept.
Yeah.
Now, what happens when the concept that you happen to be learning happens to be Torah? How did we define Torah before as Chachmasa v'Ratzayin Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the will and wisdom of God? Okay? So therefore, what he's going to say now in this next part is what's going on, if it is that if you're thinking about 2 plus 2 equals 4, and your intellect is encompassing that concept, and that concept is enclosed in your intellect, so what have you got there? You got a 2 plus 2 equals 4. What happens if that intellect that you're studying is the will and wisdom of Hashem? So the will and wisdom of Hashem now is being encompassed by your intellect,
right.
So and the will and wisdom and will of Hashem is being enclosed in your intellect.
Yes.
Okay?
Right.
Gewaltig. Hine halacha zu, hi chachmasa v'ratzon shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This halacha that we're talking about is the will and wisdom of Hashem. Okay, and we said before that how great is the will and wisdom of Hashem is infinite. That hu v'chachmasa echad, v'hu ha'yadua, v'hu ha'mada, etc. That Hashem is one with his intellect. Okay. Okay. Sha'ala b'Ratzayinai, that it rose in Hashem's mind, Hashem's will. Okay. This is predating creation. Okay. As we know, it says Alpayim Shana Kadma Teira La'ilam, that the Torah preceded the creation by 2,000 years.
Right.
Okay, so then you have to ask, just as an aside,
yeah, what
years weren't around, right, before the Earth was going around the sun.
Nor was there counting for that matter either.
Correct. So what does it mean? So the word Shana, why is a year called a year? You know why a year is called a year in Hebrew? You know, in Hebrew, everything is called by what it does.
What it does, correct.
Okay, so why is a year called a year?
Because it completes a cycle.
The word Shana means change.
Okay.
When the change is over, when you're back to the beginning, when the change is, so then you've completed a year. So there what we're saying is, so now change the interpretation to 2000 changes before creation.
Yes.
What is Alpayim? 2,000. So the word Aleph means 1,000. But Aleph also means teach. As it says, Alafacha Chachma, Alafacha Bina. I will teach you wisdom, I will teach you understanding.
Okay.
So Alpayim Shana, 2,000 changes, is 1,000 changes, 1,000 levels of Chachma, and 1,000 levels of understanding. Where do we get the number 1,000 from? Well, we know that every sphere contains 10 spheres.
Okay.
Right?
Yes.
So that means within every sphere there's 10 spheres.
No,
within every sphere is 10 spheres, that's 10. But then each one also, if you're going into the different levels of how they relate of beginning, middle, and end,
right.
So then each 10 contains 10, and each of those 10 contains 10.
Right.
So you've got 10 to the third is 1,000.
Yeah.
Then you have 10 of the, you have 1,000 for Chochmah, 1,000 for Bina. So there it says you have 2,000 changes before creation. And we will take a quick break.
Identification.
Yes.
In the truest sense. Thank you.
I
Kádál, vítád, dáš mi rád, ale mám dobrou svůj těžký nesmá se děli, já jsem to nějaké tady myšlí, že a tady jsem ono měl, jsem tady pobejí své, a tak dále, když mám tady, když mě rám, nejde.
Ome, nejde, nejde,
nejde, nejde, nejde, nejde, nejde, nejde, nejde, nejde, nejde, nejde, nejde, nejde, nejde,
finishing that desk piece. Are the drawers going to match? Are the drawers going to match?
Well, I haven't. I don't think I'm going to have the time to refinish it. I'm going to put it together, but I'm not going to have time to refinish it.
Okay.
So but no, they would not match if I refinished it and didn't do the drawers at the same time.
Okay. Maybe I'll refinish it. In the spare time that I have. I could have done it last week.
Yeah.
Man, last year I could have built a house.
The difficulty with spare time, with free time, is it means you're not making money.
Right.
And there's no, all the time in the world doesn't do any good because you don't have the money to do all the things that you need or would like to do.
Right, and usually what happens in my spare time is I got stuff scheduled and then last minute people like say, oh, I can't. Yep. Last Wednesday I went from 6 classes to 1.
Aha. Worked out good. Not real good, but...
Yeah. I'm sorry I can't do it today.
That's right.
And the one guy that I did have...
Yeah.
That's the guy who paid me $18.
Uh-huh.
He used to pay me $200 a class.
Uh-huh.
But a year and a half ago, his business was 120 employees.
Uh-huh.
Now his business is 2.5 employees.
Uh-huh.
So I'm looking at it as an investment in the future, because if this guy had 120 employees, he's going to he'll get back up there.
Yeah.
And I just stopped learning with him for 2 years. I'll never get him back.
No.
So way to look at that.
Yeah, that's.
But anytime my bills aren't getting paid.
Okay, what did I do to put this thing on?
Okay, so this halacha we say rose up in the will and wisdom of Hashem. Kishitayin Reuven kach v'kach. This is all what Hashem thought. Okay, that sometime in the future, Reuven's going to claim such and such, by way of an example. Yeah. And Shimon kach v'kach. And Shimon's going to say such and such. V'yiyapsak v'neim kach v'kach. And it'll be that the halacha is going to be such and such.
Right.
Okay? Which is an interesting thing. There's a concept which totally and completely does not fit into Western logic. There's an expression that we have, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. Because according to Judaism, not only is it that the halacha is absolutely true,
right,
which will go according to one of the litigants,
right,
but also the other opinion that says that the halacha should not be like that
is also true.
Is also 100% true.
Right.
Why? Because even the other claim is the will and wisdom of Hashem.
Right.
So this is a Hayyim Yang. It talks about it. For example, if you ever learn Masechet Kiddushin.
Okay.
Masechet Ksubas, rather. You learn Ksubas?
Okay. A little bit, yeah.
Okay, so you have over there in the second chapter all these different claims that a lady makes. As her husband's claiming, I got sold a bill of goods.
Right.
She's not what she claimed to be, and she comes up with all kinds of other counterclaims.
Right.
Okay? And these counterclaims that this woman comes up with, you would have to be a goyin adur. You'd have to be absolutely brilliant to come up with such a counterclaim.
Uh-huh.
Okay, but what? First of all, we can answer it that the way that answers it in the Hayyim Yaim is that if something's relevant to you, you're going to come up with good claims because it's relevant to you. Second of all, this is because the who said this thing ever happened with this lady? You know, so the it. But it's that's what rose up in Hashem's will.
Uh-huh.
Okay, you have, for example, he says, "Afal pishalohai v'loi elam l'blado mishkal tainis etvias elu." Even though it could never happen, you have, for example, in this week's Parsha, you have the din of a ben Sera Umara, a rebellious son.
Right, yeah.
Okay?
Right.
And there is a whole 4 or 5 Pasukim dedicated to it.
Right.
And there's a whole Perek in Gemara called ben Sera Umara. And you know what? There never was one. There never will be one.
Right.
But yet we're doing this, all this deliberation for something which is absolutely never going to happen.
Excuse me. Mary Ann, did you get Jacob's email today?
I got it, but I never read them.
Oh, his in general are very good. It's not that long, too. You need to watch it, too. Really.
You talking about Yossi or Simone?
Yossi.
Okay, I get both of them. I don't read either one of them.
I don't get who's
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yossi's like that. This is really zoned in. This is what you said now, that it never happened. But he brings that one amazing point. He said, is the parents, he says that there's a halakhim that the parents had to be like equally, like they had to be everything equal about them.
Why is it that it could never happen?
But no, he brings about the fortune. But one of his point of the whole thing is that he says kids, if what they pick up on time, what they pick up on is there's dissension from the parents, and that causes them the kids to rebel whatever. So that's why they're not mechuy. That's why they're not obligated, because.
Well, the Rashi says that the reason why you have a ben sera rare is because this guy was on a battlefield and he saw a good-looking shiksa.
No,
he brought her home.
No.
Yeah, that's what it says.
12 years old? No way. That's
what it says. And that, old. And the reason. No. And the kid.
Oh, the father. So you said
the father had a yifas tire,
yeah,
and picked her up off the battlefield.
Right.
And the whole reason why this kid was conceived was out of animal passion.
Right.
And so therefore,
and this is the result. And what the result of such animal passion is a ben sera mara.
Right. But it never happened, though.
No, there's no such thing as a ben sera. But you did have, for example, you had Dav Shalom, who was mother was a ben, who was a Yifas Tar from David HaMelech.
Oh, yes, he was, yeah.
Yes, and he hacked his half-brother into little pieces and almost killed his father.
Right.
You know, so.
Right.
Other than that, he was fine.
Other than that, he was fine, yeah. No, and it's right. the whole thing doesn't make any sense to me. The Yifas Tar doesn't make any sense to me.
Right.
It says, why do you have such a mitzvah, how to rape a woman in battle? Okay, and it says because the Yetzer Hara is such that it's burning so strong that a person would do it anyway.
Right.
Baloney. If a soldier in the IDF rapes a woman in battle over there, he's going to spend the rest of his life sitting in a military prison.
This guy's been wrecking on me who did that stuff in Iraq. They're sitting in jail for many years.
They're sitting in jail
right.
for doing that kind of stuff. That's called an atrocity. That's war crimes.
Right.
We don't do that. You know? Oh, but the Torah says it's okay.
Good question.
Torah says it's okay. Torah says you can do it anyway. Yeah, military rules. Don't touch the woman. Don't understand.
Right. But his application of it was like that. That was very good.
Yeah.
Applied
so
to today.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, do you understand? It's a relatively new concept not to touch a woman in battle.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That's a new concept.
Yeah. That's the last.
This is something that's 100
years. Last 100 years.
Old.
Yes.
It's 100 years old.
Uh huh.
So I mean.
Right.
This absolutely does apply, but because this is where the Rebbe says that our generations have advanced. Why? Look at this. Now we put a man in jail for such a thing.
Mm-hmm.
This has never dawned on the world till the last 100 years. You want to say it's an advance in culture? Yeah, it is. It's hard to fathom it, but yeah, it is.
Okay.
Anyway.
So why is it then, back to the matters at hand, why is it then that you have, what do you call it, that it never could happen,
yeah.
is what has to happen is you have a 13-year-old. Has to be still a Ben, has to still be under his father's care. That means between the age of 13 and 13 and a half. He has to steal money from his father and buy meat, ox meat and Italian wine, mm-hmm. and go eat it with his friends. It has to be cooked rare, and he has to, as the expression is, schlunger up, he has to swallow whole an entire piece of meat weighing kezias without chewing it,
right.
and sling down 4 ounces of this wine.
Right.
Okay, and then the parents have to both want to take him to court. Both
right.
parents.
Right.
They both have to be fully sighted, fully hearing, fully able to talk, and fully able to walk.
Right.
Okay, if one of them walks with a gimp, it doesn't work. If one of them's nearsighted,
right.
sorry, it's not going to happen. And we take him to the Beis Din, and he is flogged.
Right.
Then if he does it again, the same thing,
right.
and within 6 months, then we kill him.
Right.
Okay, it's not going to happen. I mean, there's nobody that stupid that's going to allow such a thing to happen to themselves. You know, maybe all he has to do is wait like another month or two. He can do it again,
yeah.
and he's off the hook.
Off the hook, right.
So it's not good. So now, but back to this thing I was talking about, the litigant's claim is also true.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah.
You have it with all the arguments in the Gemara.
Right.
Beis Shammai will say one thing, Beis Hillel will say totally, completely the opposite.
Right.
They're both 100% true.
True.
Now,
right.
why do we have problems with that is because we were raised in Western society.
That's
Western society's right. thought process is based on triangles. Can we talk about this?
No, go ahead.
Okay. Somebody, good 2,500 years ago,
yeah.
came up with this idea that if you want to find the length of an hypotenuse of a right triangle, that if you add the squares of the sides, you'll get, and the square root of that will be this length of the
right.
The sum of the squares will be the square root of the sum of the squares will equal the square will equal this the length of the hypotenuse.
Right, right.
Okay?
Yes.
So that means A squared plus B
squared
equals C squared.
Square root of C.
Right. Okay? So the according to that logic then,
yes.
the way that the Pythagoreans felt
Pythagorean theory, yes,
yes is yep. that A squared plus B squared equals C squared, then A squared plus not B squared cannot equal C squared. Cannot
correct.
Equal C
correct
squared.
Correct statement. Correct.
Okay. So either it is or it isn't.
Isn't.
It's on or it's off. That's the way it is.
That's
it's very a flat way of thinking.
Yes.
Okay.
It's
you know
a mathematical
what,
thing.
Do you know what did in the Pythagoreans? The square root of 2.
Indeed, yes.
The Pythagoreans were of the opinion that there's only such a thing called real numbers.
Yes.
Okay. Oops. Now, but then you show them you have a triangle with two lengths of one.
Yes.
So therefore, the hypotenose is the length of square root of two.
1.414, right?
Yeah, square root of two, but there's no number square root of two. So they all killed themselves.
It's a great idea. You've got nothing better to do on a weekend. Yes, well.
Right, so that's what Western philosophy is all based on. When you have the idea of something, the expression in Yiddish of a goyishe cup. You heard this expression?
I have, but I never knew it.
Okay, there is something to that, and it's not that goyim are stupid. No, there are plenty of very smart non-Jews out there.
Right.
Okay. Of all of the Nobel Prize winners in the world.
Yes.
Okay, 27% of them are Jewish.
Correct.
Which is an incredible thing.
Right.
But that still leaves 73% that weren't Jewish.
Right. Okay.
Doing also very incredible things.
Yeah, let's. Okay.
Okay, there's a lot of smart non-Jews out there.
All right,
it's
fine.
The expression Goyish Cup doesn't mean that the guy's stupid.
No.
What it means is that Western philosophy
locked in a framework.
He's locked in a specific grid of how to think.
Right, and he can't go out of it.
Correct. Yes. Whereas with Judaism, you have Talmudic thought,
right,
which is holistic, which is taking into the consideration that, yes, it is possible A squared plus B squared could equal C squared, and A squared plus not B squared could still equal C squared. It depends on what circumstances you're talking about.
Yes. Okay.
Because both opinions are valid.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So that Reuven is saying, I believe it's such and such, and Shimon is saying, I believe it's such and such, and the halacha is such and such. So all three statements are
true.
Absolutely 100% true.
Yes.
And indeed, you could spend your whole entire lifetime devoted to why does Shimon say what he says if he's wrong? If the halacha is not like Shimon, so why is Shimon purporting that it should be his way? What's his whole rationale behind it? Hmm. You could spend your whole entire lifetime behind it.
Right. Yes, you
okay?
could.
Okay. And with for example, with Beis Shammai, Beis
Hillel. And it wouldn't be wasted.
No, it would not be wasted at all.
Right. Wouldn't be wasted.
And it's an amazing thing when we're talking about learning Gemara. So the first piece of Gemara that I usually learn with people is usually the first piece of Gemara that little kids learn. And little kids, it usually gets lost on them. Because they don't see it. It's supposed to show the real depth of Gemara.
Okay.
Here's your introduction to Gemara. There's a Mishnah in Baba Metzia.
Okay.
These things are yours to keep, and these things you have to announce.
Okay.
Eila Messiah Shalov Eila Chayav Lahachris, right? You may have learned this one way back when. Okay. So what are the things? The first one it says over there is scattered in fruit, Bedalad Amos. And a square area of Dalad Amos, you find scattered fruit.
Hmm.
Okay? So Gemara asks, how much fruit is it? So they say Kav Bedalad Amos. You have a peck of wheat, which is scattered over 36 square feet.
Okay.
If you find that's yours. You can keep it. Okay, we go to a whole thing where are we talking about, and it comes that it's only if it's on the threshing floor. That's a side point.
Okay.
So the Gemara asks a question, why is it that amount in that area is yours? Is it, and basically what it bottoms down to is it's not cost effective for the person to come back and pick it up.
Okay.
He was there threshing his grain.
Right.
And he's got bags and bags and bags and bags of grain.
Yes.
And here there is one kav, a peck, that's spread out. It's not worth it for him to sweep the stuff up.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Fair enough. Either because it's too much bother, it's too much effort involved.
Right.
Or there's not enough monetary gain.
There's no value.
No value to it.
Right.
So the Gemara asks the question, what would be if you had two kavs, which would be a bushel, in a square area of 72 square feet? So here everything's doubled. Okay, so you got twice as much stuff.
Right.
But you got twice as much effort to pick it up. So your ratio of cost effectiveness is still exactly the same.
Right. Okay.
Okay, yeah. So would the guy go bother to pick it up?
Yes, he would.
Then the Gemara asks the question, what if it was a half a kav, which would be 2 quarts
right.
of grain, yes. spread out in an area of...
3 by 3?
Yeah,
square feet?
9 square feet.
Right.
Okay. It's a lot less bother, but he's picking up a lot less stuff.
Yes.
Okay. Then the Gemara asks the question, what if it was, as you're talking the whole thing about a kav of wheat, what if it would be a kav of sesame seeds? Oh. Sesame seeds is a lot more bother, but...
They're a whole lot more valuable.
They're a whole lot more valuable.
Sure, of course.
Okay, and then the Gemara asks the question, what about if it was a peck of pomegranates? peck of pomegranates, very easy to pick up.
Yeah.
But what's the big deal? How much money is there in a peck of pomegranates?
Right,
and the Gemara answers all these questions.
Uh-huh.
We don't know.
Uh-huh. Good. I love it.
So you go through the whole thing, okay? And you come up with this thing over here. We don't know. Uh-huh. And you know what? Perfectly fine. Perfectly okay. Because what you have just done is taken a situation and pulled it apart from every possible angle that you know what to do or not. If you want to know what to do, go pick up a Shulchan Aruch. You'll see over there in Choshen Mishpat. Mm-hmm. It'll tell you what to do. Mm-hmm. And then you'll know what to do. Because some smart person was able to sit down and figure out, well, okay, the Gemara says we don't know what to do, but you got to know what to do. You can't wait till Eliyahu with that grain over there. It's not going to last that long.
Right. So this is
so he came up with what he's going to do. So that's in Shulchan Aruch. But the Gemara that went through is not just an exercise in mental gymnastics,
right?
But rather what it is, it's mind building. It's a way of totally changing a person's perception and getting them out of planar, linear thought. Mm-hmm. And that's how it's possible to have this person saying white, this person saying black, and both of them being 100% correct.
It's changing from two-dimensional thought.
Correct, and making it three-dimensional.
To three-dimensional thought, yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, so even though it could be that this is never going to happen, ever, okay? That was one of the problems in the last 2 generations of teaching Gemara. What was lost is I've met many old-timers.
Yeah.
And what do they hit me with? Oh, Gemara, yeah, I know Gemara. You got Shor Shenaga Chesapara. That's the first thing that comes out of their mouth. Shor Shenaga Chesapara, you have an ox that gored a cow, and there's a dead fetus next to the cow. So did the cow abort before or after it was gored? And who has to pay for the fetus? Uh-huh. Okay? So here you have people that are teaching it. They learned it when they were kids.
Right.
And they didn't bother asking, well, what's the relevance of this? Because, okay, so maybe they had cows, maybe they didn't have cows. But then you come to the next generation, you got guys coming through the system, through the Holocaust, and then coming into America and living in cities where the guys don't even know what a cow is.
Yes.
And saying, what arcane stuff this is. Mm-hmm. Why do I need to bother with this stuff? And because it wasn't presented as a modality of thinking, but rather it was just presented as a list of facts. This is Gemara. This is Gemara. This is what you learn Gemara. Don't ask questions, just learn Gemara. So therefore what happened is it got lost.
You lose it, right.
They just totally, completely lost it.
I was overhearing a Gemara. There was an individual here teaching Gemara. And they were, I don't even remember the subject matter anymore, and they were discussing it, and Look, I know as much Gemara as I do, I do quantum physics, all right? But I heard what they were saying, and I knew it was absolutely incorrect, because they had no concept of the farm implements that they were talking about. I said, wait a minute, this is of us, and this is of us, and this is of us. Are you sure? Yeah. They were blown away, you know. It changes.
Okay, I mean, there's learning and there's learning, and it helps, you know.
And I just, Only because you're not really a part of the concept.
Yeah.
You don't comprehend the concept.
There's an old Talmudic joke about a guy who says, I learned the entire Masechta Shabbos.
Mm-hmm.
How long did you do it? He said, I learned it perfectly, except there's two abbreviations I couldn't figure out. Yeah. Resh Hey Resh and Resh Hey Yud, which stand for public domain and private domain. But other than that, I got the whole Masechta Shabbos.
Got the whole thing worked out. Yes, indeed, yes. Other than that, everything's fine, yes.
Okay. Right. So, anyway. So, it's... So this whole thing is the will of Hashem.
Hmm.
So even the wrong answer is containing the infinite wisdom and will of Hashem. Makom makom, but nonetheless, fourth line down. Me'ach shekach ala beretzayin v'chachmas ha'shol kadosh baruch hu, since it rose up in Hashem's will and wisdom. She'im yitayin zekach v'zekach yiyapsach kach, that if this one says such, and the other one says the other thing, and the halach is going to be like that, hari kisha'adam yoideya u'meisig b'sichl p'sach zekah halacha harucha b'mishnah b'gomar ha'poiskim, when a person is going to understand with his intellect this ruling as it is rendered in the halacha, explained in the Mishnah and the Gemara and in the codes, what is this guy got in his head is not just a fact, but he is Taifis Umakiv, grasping and encompassing with his intellect, the will and wisdom of Hashem, the Leis Machshava Tafisa Bey, that no thought can grasp with him at all, the Leiber Ritzayin of Chachmasa, not his will or his wisdom, but only how could you do it? And that unless the person is understanding the halacha, because it says, "Mishachar of Beis Hamikdash ain't a Kadosh Baruch Hu shor el bedalad hamishal halacha." Once the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, if you want to find Hashem, go learn Shulchan Aruch.
Right.
People ask me right in the first chapter of Shulchan Aruch, Kisser Shulchan Aruch. Right, the first chapter talks about. When you get dressed, you put on your left shoe, you put on your right shoe, you put on your left shoe, you tie your left shoe, you tie your right shoe. Does God really care how you tie your shoes?
Yeah.
And the answer is yes.
Yes.
Because it's in the book.
Yes.
There must be a reason for it then.
Yeah, sure.
Now, since you're reading Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, so it looks very inane that that's the way you have to do it. Someone has to tell you how to tie your shoes. According to halacha,
uh-huh.
But if you would go into it and find out why it is that must be the will and wisdom of Hashem,
uh-huh.
You could spend a whole lifetime on that too.
Uh-huh.
Okay, because by doing so, because what is it? That is the will and wisdom of Hashem that you tie your shoes in such a specific way, and the will and wisdom of Hashem is infinite. V'gam sichon l'mubish ben v'hu yichud nifla she'in yichud kemayu v'loy ke'erch ha'nimsa klo b'gashmias. And the unity that now exists between your intellect, which is
right.
Part of you,
right.
And this halacha, which is the will and wisdom of Hashem, which is totally and completely united with Hashem.
Yeah.
So now there are you and Hashem are totally united. As it says in the Gemara, Talas Kishor and Enan, there are three knots. HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'araisa v'yisrael. Hashem with the Torah and the Torah with the Jews. So we become united to Hashem through the vehicle of the Torah.
Right.
Through studying Torah.
Right.
And there's no way comparable to describe the unity that exists. The closest example that we have of the unity is the word that you're going to say before you said it. Before you said it, it's already, you have the speech all planned out, you know exactly how you're going to say it, where you're going to emphasize the words, how loud it's going to be, how you're going to project yourself, the whole way it's going to be displayed, but you haven't said it yet. So it exists as a something, but it's totally and completely within you. It's totally and completely part of you.
Right, right.
There is no way that you would be able to put you under any type of a scan and say, oh, there's that word he's going to say.
Right.
Science will never, ever be able to discern what words a person is thinking.
Agree.
Okay? We can do all kinds of things now to say that this person's thinking this type of thought or he's thinking that type of thought, but they're never going to be able to say, this is what the guy's thinking. Never going to happen.
Right.
Because it's part and parcel of you. Now, what's wrong with that example? Why is the unity that exists, one of our Jew studying Torah, is even greater than that? Because there's one problem with that example of the word, is because the word is a something. Before it's totally, completely part of the person, but it's a something. Hmm. When a person studying Torah, they're not a something anymore. They are incorporated into the will and wisdom of Hashem. Mm-hmm. They are ceasing to exist as a separate entity from Hashem. Mm. That's why it says, "Afilu echad she'isek v'teira shechina shara kenegda yeshu kenegda." That is, even one person sitting and learning Teira, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sitting opposite him. Mm-hmm. Because by sitting and learning Torah, what the person is doing is totally and completely nullifying their will and wisdom to Hashem's will and wisdom. And they are being incorporated within it. That's why it says, for example, there's many examples in the Gemara. Yeah, Pirkei Avos. Hamasik b'shinasa v'oimer, ma na'a ilon zeh, ma na'a ni'ar zeh, a person interrupts his studies and he says, how beautiful is that tree? How beautiful is that plow field? Right. Has obligated his soul.
Right.
It doesn't say that he's chayev nisa. He doesn't deserve to get killed.
Right.
All he did was say, hey, nice tree. What it says is mechayev es nafshay, because what has happened? He's in the middle of studying.
Right.
What's happening when he's studying is that he's totally and completely united with Hashem.
Right.
What part of Hashem? The will and wisdom of Hashem, which is higher than beyond, well beyond the creation process. Because the Torah was Kadma Olam 2,000 years. The Torah came before creation, 2,000 levels. Mm-hmm. And what is he doing? He's interrupting himself from that unity and saying, look how Elohim has manifested itself in the world. Mm-hmm. That's a very low level of godliness. What does that do to it? That's a very traumatic thing to do to a person's soul. To suddenly rip themselves up from that unity of going beyond the creation process and suddenly attaching it to something which is condensed and contained in creation.
So low. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
Yeah.
Because by doing this, the person is totally united and one, mamish, from every aspect. Mm-hmm. Is how we conclude that statement. This is where we're going to stop.
It's good. Excellent.